Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. The Idea Talks is a weekly podcast with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. And I'm your co-host, Drew Polvencia. For more information on this podcast, visit ideanetwork.church.
Hey, Drew.
Hey, Josh.
Hey, I got a riddle for you.
All right, I'm down.
Okay, what's purple? You spell it forwards and backwards. It says exactly the same thing. Yeah. It rhymes with orange, and it has teeth.
Forwards and backwards, purple, rhymes with orange, has teeth. I don't know.
I don't know either, but we can talk about the ideas of it.
All right. Got him.
That is a stupid joke.
Hey. Hey. It's very in our lane.
It is in our lane, and hey, so is the Idea Summit.
Very true. For the whole ministry family.
For the whole ministry.
It's happening January 30th through the February 1st of 2023 in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas.
It's the very first Idea Network event that is a two-night, three-day event, and we're really excited about it. It's not just a day. It's not just a night. It's not just a summit. It is the next level, the zenith, the very pinnacle, the summit of summits. We call it the Idea Summit for the whole ministry family. Now, why for the ministry family, Drew?
Because we want everybody to come.
Yeah.
So we've had many idea days, nights, and summits in the past that really have been geared towards ministry leaders, pastors, and their wives, but hasn't really focused on the entire family.
Yeah, and this time we want you to not only know that your kids are welcome to come, but they're actually encouraged, because paralleled right alongside of the adult conference for ministry leaders, there is a kids conference and a teen conference for each and every one of you. Yeah, they're going to have events, they're going to have parties, they're going to have great opportunities to hear from teachers in those fields, specifically talking to them about what it's like to be in the ministry. What is it like to be a PK? What is it like to have mom and dad in full-time ministry or bivocational ministry? And they're going to love this event.
Now, some highlights for the summit. Our keynote speakers is going to be Dr. Tony Evans. We have Alan Parr, who's popular YouTuber, speaker, preacher of the word. We have Brian Sams and yourself.
Yeah, I'm going to be there as well.
You're going to be there as well.
And you.
I'll be there.
We're going to have a great time there in January 30th, 31st, and February 2nd. You can go up and sign up at ideanetwork.church/summit. Looking forward to seeing you in Dallas.
Welcome to episode 164 of the Idea Talks. Today, we're talking about bivocational pastors' kids with Mrs. Tice.
Surprise.
Hey, Heather. I saw you this morning. We live at the same house.
Yes. Yeah. I think we open every podcast that you and I do together like that.
Oh, same way.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Very cool.
Now, I can just feel
I think
the
it's
room,
come to be expected
the,
now.
The magnetism of your relationship, because you just got off of a 2-month sabbatical with each other.
That's true. Now, when this lands, it's going to be like November. But yeah, when we're recording it, we each other now, which is good. It pretty much saved our marriage.
That's great. Because we recorded a few weeks before that, and I was like, they're either going to kill each other or they're going to love
each other. Did you sense that? Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. I was like, wow. Hey, let's go back and listen to that.
Yeah, I think I was tired that day, but I don't remember being ticked off at you that day.
But
you never know. I'm sure. Drew, you're very insightful, so perhaps.
I try to be emotionally intelligent.
So a couple
it's difficult.
So a couple years ago, we had a podcast called The Bible Talks, where Heather and I would talk about the Bible. And we did 3 years of that. There's 100 episodes or more. Anyway. Yeah. If you go back and listen to some of that, you can definitely tell there were moments we were not happy with each other.
We didn't hide it.
Definitely.
That's funny.
Well, I listen to them every morning when I, you know, go jog. I'm just kidding. I don't listen to those.
It's motivation.
I love that you threw in jogging too, like combining all the things.
All the things. Well, after
as I sip on my protein shake and jog, I listen to the Bible Talks and pray through it.
While meditating.
While meditating.
Yeah.
And cutting my own hair.
So here's the conversation today. Help! Dad's a plumber and a pastor.
What? That's the title? Are you really calling? I thought it was bivocational pastors.
No, this is the part of the podcast.
Kind of like the summary.
Yeah. I'm summarizing for our people.
I just have to tell you that it seems like any session I'm involved with, not just here, but wherever, ends with an exclamation point. Like, what's the role of a pastor's wife? Exclamation point. Like, the confusing place of women in ministry, exclamation point.
I like it's exclamation like,
it's
points.
Like, y'all think I'm a crisis speaker.
Well, you can speak to crisis, people in crisis.
Well, I hope this is not. I hope that not everybody that's in bivocational ministry is currently in crisis.
No, they're not. But can I finish my intro?
Yes, please. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, here we go.
I'm ready.
I was just about to do it again. You said one time, like, we bicker.
Is this bickering?
Uh-huh.
I feel like it's playful banter.
I think we're less...
Christina would probably call us flirting, but it's okay.
Oh, yeah, I like that better. I think we might be less charming than we think. It's a real possibility. Okay, here it is. Help! Dad's a plumber and a pastor. If you find yourself among the fastest growing ministry dynamic in America, that of bivocational ministry, and happen to have children in the home, you're going to want to hear this episode. We are joined today by
Heather
Tice, my wife and ministry partner, who also happens to be a bivocational PK. Ah, so you're the expert in the room. Hey, Heather, tell us a little bit about your journey with your father and mother who took on entering into the ministry.
So yeah, so I want to give a little background. And I told Drew before we started, I'm really excited to share this because I get to talk about my parents. So both my parents are with the Lord. Mom passed in 2012, and then Daddy was 20... Wow, it's hard to do the years now. Everything since COVID's been hard to do the years. 2021.
2021.
Yes. So we're coming up on 2 years in January. But watching my parents go through ministry and being like, I loved the ministry as a kid. And I really am excited to share memories about them and life growing up. I really feel like I had an idyllic childhood, which, you know, the world's not perfect. Parents aren't perfect, but yet I had this wonderful childhood, and that was largely because of Melvin and Martha Cordes. And I wish that they could be here to do this podcast.
Yeah.
Because they had so much wisdom, and I think that made such a difference. And I wish they could speak into this, but I will do my best to do that for them. My dad and mom were always kind of involved in ministry. They're both Southerners, both from farming families, and lived out in the country, grassroots type of people.
Grew up in Georgia.
No, Alabama. Oh, Drew, how dare you?
Wow.
How
she's not a bulldog.
I'm leaving this room right now. No, I'm kidding. Actually, I love George too, but yes, moving on. They were from Alabama, North Alabama. And my dad was actually always involved in church, led choir, different things. And interestingly, in a church that may not have trained their altar workers too well, because when he went forward convicted of salvation and a need for salvation, the man up front said, well, bless God, you're a member of the church, which we know is not how you actually go to heaven, gain eternal life. But my dad was always a student of the Bible, loved the book of Romans, went home and read that and studied it. And on his own, as a young man, as a teenager, received Christ. Married my mom, who also grew up in church and ended up being the church pianist, even as a little girl in this little country church. I wish I could go back. Hopefully in heaven one day, God will let me go back and see her playing the piano as a little girl. But she grew up in church, but was not saved and did not know. And there was not a Bible preaching church she was part of. And the first time when she and my dad were married and went to a Bible preaching church, their mouths dropped open and they couldn't believe it. And later they got a visit from the pastor and one of the other men in the church. And my mom trusted Christ that night, understood the gospel, and fully received it. So that was years and years before I came along. They served in ministry in those churches, got highly involved once they're both saved and connected in this church. And I don't know if it's done anymore, but back then there was a very popular thing where churches would have like little ministry school seminaries. But it was just on a very simple level. So basically you could come in once or twice a week at night and they would go through different courses of, you know, counseling or a course on Revelation. And my dad and actually a few of his friends, they did that. So my dad actually went through kind of an in-church house seminary.
Okay, like a Bible Institute. And there are a lot of churches that'll do that. That's cool.
Exactly. So he did that, got that ministry training, and he and my mom began to do children's ministry.
Ah, I see.
As lay people.
Yeah.
And they were living in Tennessee, which is where I was born. And when we moved to, we were in Louisiana for a little while, moved to Alabama, back to Alabama, which is where I'm from, grew up, spent my whole life. I was about four. And as they began looking for a church, my dad was a businessman. He was always a natural leader, a full-time manager at a place called Mettler Toledo. And I encourage you, listeners, when you go into your grocery store today and you see the scale, it'll probably say Toledo Scale or Mettler Toledo. That was Melvin Cordes' company. I'm still proud to see those. But he was excellent manager, leader of people. And when they were relocated to Alabama, they began to look for a church. And they found a church that they loved in Coleman, Alabama, called Trinity Baptist Church. And when they went there the first Sunday, they just loved the people, loved everything. But the pastor had just resigned and left. Mm-hmm. And of course, I don't know and remember most of this because I was so young. But basically, with my dad just being charismatic and a leader and a Bible student and having that seminary training and a heart for ministry, they immediately asked him, would you fill in till we find a pastor? And he said, sure, I'll fill in till you find somebody. I'll fill the pulpit.
All right. So a lot of our listeners right now are thinking to themselves, oh, my word, that's exactly what happened to me. Like, you're sitting there and you're like, I am not a pastor, and the church comes to you, but you're a spiritual leader, you walk with God, mm-hmm. you do have a community reputation, you're mm-hmm. very much 1 Timothy chapter 3, and now the church wants you to shepherd them? I mean, sure, yeah. it's not a church of 500 people, but there's 50, mm-hmm. 80, 120 people looking to you yeah. to spiritually lead them. Man, what do you do in that scenario? So keep going, yeah. tell us Melvin's story.
So they said they would fill in, and my dad filled in for over 10 years. It was a long time. They just couldn't find a pastor. No, he was
a lot of people's shoulders just slouched.
I feel like the pulpit community needs to be a little more active on that one.
Well, yeah. they know when they're getting a good deal, don't they?
Yeah. He connected well with the deacons of the church, very good friends with many of them, and just that's where God had him for that time. And so, wow.
So for 10 yes. years, he served as a pastor of the church, but that mm-hmm. entire time, he's a growing
Working
executive.
Working a full-time job, yeah.
Wow.
So that was my life growing up. And it's funny because it was interesting being asked to do this because I never considered myself like a pastor's kid. Like, we went to Christian college, you know that. And if they ever had people raise their hands for a pastor's kid, I never did. Not because I was ashamed of it. I loved it. But, you know, I would hear horror stories from pastors' families. And I just didn't have that child. And I thought, well, you know, they're not looking at me. I wasn't full-time ministry. So I never claimed it. So it's kind of really fun to actually be in here and to kind of talk about it.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting in the audience right now is represented, no exaggeration, probably a few thousand children mm-hmm. that are parented by people who are listening that are pastor's kids. At least that's the way their churches view them. They're bivocational pastor's kids, which is unique to being than just a pastor's kid, right? There are some unique challenges, and that's what we want to talk about. The first question we really have for you is, what are the unique challenges facing bivocational families that may not be what our family faces since we are not bivocational?
Okay, so I read this question. I thought about it quite a bit, and I think I'm probably not going to give the answer that you want me to give or that most want to hear. Now, I will say there is one unique challenge I did think of that I know my father faced and that I think would be something that can happen in bivocational ministry. And I'll share that first. But then I really think the things that came to mind that can be a challenge, I think it's just kind of across the board. Mm. And Satan wants us to think this is just you, nobody else. But same thing he does to full-time ministry.
Like what?
The grass is greener. Mm. You know, if you were in a different situation, if you didn't have to go and work a job, in full-time ministry, there's the idea if you could escape. I have friends, a group of friends or pastors' wives all over the nation. And I laugh because there is this kind of daydream among pastors' wives that are in full-time ministry. So they're highly involved in their church, and they dream about going to Target and working there and just stocking the shelves. And we've had these conversations about doing something mindless that I'm not, there's no emotional, it's fun. I get to look at pretty stuff and I get my paycheck that way. But what is that? That's the grass is greener. Mm. And it's that idea of forgetting the benefits that God is giving you, not loving and cultivating a heart of gratefulness. And this is convicting in my own heart. So I'm not preaching here. I'm just telling you what we face. It's true. I think that can be very much the case if you're bivocational ministry, is that the same thing, you think it's just you because that's what Satan lies and says, nobody else understands. Well, or if they don't have to deal with that, and if you didn't have to deal with this, but no, it's not greener. God has us placed in certain personalities, certain giftedness, are dealing with certain roles in ministry, mm-hmm. certain locations that God calls us to. And it's very easy for us to begin to focus on the negative and hate those things and allow them to become a source of bitterness rather than thankfulness.
So I would be happier if we were not bivocational, or I would be happier if...
We could be bivocational.
We could be bivocational.
There's that dream sometimes of, or out of ministry completely or whatever. We think that something better is out there.
Mm, that is really interesting. Good thought.
Yeah. The other thing I thought about is the flexibility, the two things, I guess I have two things that are really unique to bivocational ministry. I think the flexibility of schedule, that is something, if you're working a full-time job, that is going to be difficult, is you're not going to have as much flexibility with schedule all the time. Now, we have a friend that's in a job, secular, it's still ministry related because he does like hospice care, and he's able to kind of set his hours a bit more in that job. So he has the same amount of hours every week that a full-time working person does. But if he needs to go to a kid's ball game, he's able to work that. So I guess some jobs allow for that, but I can imagine there's some people out there that you don't have that. You're working for a place like Drew, you get that you got to come in when they say come in. So that's one. The biggest one, I think, though, and this is one that maybe we don't consider as much, and this is one I saw my dad face, is if there is growth, God blesses, and there's growth in a ministry, and if you're doing well professionally and you're getting promoted, that my dad, both things happened. The church grew. I think at the top, Trinity was running 175, which may not seem like a lot, but that's a lot, especially when you're working a full-time job.
Yeah, rural, full-time.
And at the same time, Mettler Toledo is like, this man is gifted, and they began to expand him to not just be a manager in Decatur, Alabama, but to begin to be the southeastern manager. So he would be traveling to Memphis, and he'd have to go over to Georgia.
He was the regional director,
He had to go around and make business trips many times to all these other stores. So now you've got travel, so you're increasing responsibility in all these areas. And then something's got to give, and you're going to have to make a choice. So that's something I could see happening as well. And then also, I think trying to hire staff, if you're growing, that's the other complication you're going to come into, is if you're ever wanting to hire staff, that's going to be a difficulty for you if you're not, I think, full-time. Yeah.
It's interesting you brought that up, that he was successful in both arenas. And I think sometimes we think that one has to suffer because, and sometimes it does, right? And we'll get into like the impact on the family here in a little bit. But like, I think it's awesome if somebody is successful and they're putting in practices in ministry and life to become a successful person, period. And the world wants to reward that.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. So kind of moving on a little bit, but like, what's a piece of advice you'd give to a bivocational leader who desires to love their congregation and their family? So they have a deep desire to be there, the support system, present themselves as a loving wife or father to their kids, a great wife or husband to their spouse, but they also have this desire and love to have to fulfill the needs of the congregation.
Okay. There were two things that I remember seeing in my parents. And it's interesting because one, I've heard Josh and his family talk about a bit, and my parents did it. They did it a little less upfront because they were simple Alabama folk, not showy Las Vegas crowd.
Different types of people.
But the idea that ministry can be fun and involving your family in ministry, I was thinking about this today, and kids really are receptive. Kids want to naturally have fun. I know your family would often talk to you guys about, this is fun and we get to do that. I don't remember my mom and dad often saying, you know, we get to do this and it's fun. But they brought me along. I was always a part of the things they were doing. And as a kid, to me, it was fun. I remember my mom cleaning the church. And because mom did not project this spirit of, I have to do it. And I really honestly think because of her walk with God, I know there were days she didn't want to because that's how life is. But I think she looked at it as an introvert, especially as something she could do for the Lord. And so when we went into church, I don't remember her having this spirit of, we have to do this. And I'm sad. And I remember having so much fun. I would go in the back and play teacher in one of the classrooms and use the chalkboard and later the whiteboard when we moved up, you know, technology.
Moving on up.
Yes. And so I remember thinking, like, those are some of my favorite memories. I remember my mom was a church pianist. And I remember my siblings were much older and out of the house. So I was like an only child. So when I was sick, you know, I went to church with them. And you'd think that would be miserable, right? But I thought it was so cool because that little tiny pastor's office had a couch. And I got to sleep in there on that couch during church, and nobody knew where I was. And I could even sit at Daddy's desk if I want to, you know. And it's funny, the things that we forget childhood, and we forget that kids can have a positive outlook and enjoy life unless we're telling them. And that really, I don't even want to say telling them. If we have the spirit, again, of this is not good, this is bad, it's a problem. My other favorite memory, by the way, was getting to go out with people. Like, I remember taking out the guest speakers and missionaries. And I remember as a kid always thinking, this is so cool, I get to do this. Like, how many of my friends would love to sit here with this missionary and ask them questions or hear my parents talk to this evangelist? I remember we had an evangelist stay at our house, and my dad got him out farming because my dad and mom were the type of people that were hardworking, and they didn't know, like, they would constantly be out there. And so my dad got this evangelist out on the tractor, and he forgot to wear a hat. And the rest of the week, he preached a revival with a red head, all sunburnt, you know, because they were all balding. So, you know, the old time evangelists, they're always balding. Not these new swanky guys with all their hair.
Dave Young, we're looking at you.
I think she's talking about you.
Actually, I was. If you're listening, Dave Young, I was thinking you got a good set of hair, man. So congratulations on that. That was not the old school evangelist. But I remember having them in our house and going out to the old school Pizza Hut. And these are treasured memories.
Yeah.
Missionaries and I think a glimpse of ministry, including full-time ministers I got to see into because of my parents.
So it was a real positive outlook that your parents had both on secular work, quote unquote, and sacred work. And in reality, they viewed their entire life as ministry, but balancing both brought you to a positive viewpoint of ministry so that when you met somebody who was going into ministry, you yourself being called to ministry, it seemed like something you wanted to pursue.
Yeah, that was something the Lord put as a desire in my heart early on. And I'm sure that the parents I had and the role they played were a part of that. You mentioned balance, and I wish this is where I feel like, how did they do it? Because I do remember my parents had friends who were in ministry that we loved dearly, and they were also bivocational ministers. He was in construction, and they were at a church that I don't know how else to call it except needy church. But because that pastor and his wife didn't put any bounds like on anything, like if you were having, you know, my parents would kind of joke about it, not in a gossipy way, but in a very clear way and out of concern for their friends. And I think also teaching their daughter who one day might be going into ministry, there was this idea as I got older that they would talk about, you know, that our friends, they're having physical issues. Like they were breaking down way before they should be because they had to be at everything. Every Sunday school activity, they would have to go to it. If someone was having ingrown toenail removed, pastor needed to come pray over it. I'm not kidding. That was that culture. And because they wouldn't take, and I think they probably had conversations with the friends. I was out playing with the goats, so I have no idea. But I'm sure they did because they loved them about, you know, you don't have to do that. But that was a choice my parents made in good leadership of being available, but also recognizing not everything is an emergency.
So clearly some of the most hardworking ministers I've ever known are bivocational. And I've got some friends out there right now listening, and deeply inside, they kind of wonder, like, will my children ever see, do they see the hard work I'm putting in? I want to know from your point of view, as an adult woman looking back, did you ever see how hard your father and mother worked to care for the church community, to care for you as a family? Talk about that perspective of a child.
I think it's hard for kids to see things sometimes clearly until you're an adult. I mean, don't you feel that way? Like, I know if you're a woman out there listening, we hear this all the time, and you felt this as a mom yourself, you're like, wow, I never realized all that went into motherhood until I got in there. And I think there's some things that it's just hard for kids to see. I knew my parents were hard workers. In addition to my dad's job and the church, they raised cows for fun. Like, who does that? Farm people do that. Country people. They had a garden.
Not Drew and I.
like for the milk or like what?
To sell like just, for beef.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. So they did that for years. And that meant
how
Saturdays.
How are your cows doing, Drew?
They're flourishing in the pasture.
Yeah.
Behind my 20 square foot backyard.
What's so funny is we've got friends who are pastors who are out there right now, you know, that they do this, right? They've got a farm. They do this as their hobby. Yeah.
And maybe like that, maybe that's their outlet. Like to your point, they have like a mindless.
For my parents, it was a lifestyle. And that's one of the things I think that generation had this this, you work hard. That's just what you do. And sometimes to a fault, I don't think my parents did. I think they had a good balance, which again, I wish I could speak more to that, how they developed that balance. But no, they were hardworking, because even with a garden, not only is it plain, but when it's time to pull everything in, you have to, and then you have to quickly shuck the corn, silk the corn. I remember sitting on the patio and friends and family coming over, and we would do that. And then mom's cooking it and freezing it and canning it. And I mean, it was, I think I didn't realize how busy it was, but looking back, I can definitely see how hard they worked.
It sounds like they weren't hesitant to involve you in the work, just to like teach you life skills and that kind
of thing. Well, I was also the baby of the family. Gotcha. And if Chris is listening, my brother, if you're listening, Chris, I know he is like losing his mind, because the boys had to do all kind of stuff. They had to work at a dairy
and
farm.
Heather was out playing in the backyard with the goats.
They're smelling the
I would have
lions.
To learn how to garden. I would have to learn how to garden. I do know how. I'm a good corn shucker. But when it comes to canning, or like if God ever moved us somewhere where the earth did not fight against me, as it does in Las Vegas, I would try to garden. I really would. I would try to garden the earth and I with the ground, and I would become partners. But I would have to learn a lot about that. But yeah, so certain parts I did. I held a lot of buckets of nails to repair fences. So I did get that pleasure that my brothers enjoyed of standing there. It can't sit on the ground while Daddy nailed the fence. I had to stand there and hold that bucket. Actually, not even a bucket. It was an old Folgers coffee tin. Full with nails and stuff.
I feel like it can be really comforting to think right now, 20 years from now, that our children will be able to look back and see, and they'll be able to recognize. And especially for those guys who are, you're balancing family, ministry, full-time work, trying to be a fun parent, trying to do all these things. Like, do they see it? Will they recognize it? And the answer to that is, I believe absolutely they will.
I don't think my parents, by the way, were disingenuous or hiding things from me. I think they were also, though, wise about what they shared. And, you know, it's amazing. I think we may have a generation, our generation even, that can overshare sometimes with our children things that little shoulders aren't meant to carry.
Yeah. Now, not necessarily like we talked about two episodes ago about how to take a bad situation in the church and train your children from it, but maybe oversharing what you're emotionally and spiritually going through and the burden that is yours to bear, not necessarily your children. Is that what you're referring
to? Yes, exactly. I mean, we face this. We're not in bivocational ministry, but even just as a parent and adult, we're not constantly telling our kids about bills or whatever things are coming on, you know. And I know as my kids have gotten to be teenagers, I've had to watch it, because there's every once in a while we'll be in a car and I'll start just, you know, saying stuff. And then I'm like, wait a minute, they're in their teen years. We're definitely training them, making them aware of life. But right now, this is just mom pouring out all the stuff that she's bearing, and I can feel the weight of it on them, and I have to stop.
Yeah, they're not trained. Yeah. They're not built to carry that yet.
Yeah, and they need to be able to enjoy that childhood.
I think that's a great point.
I think that's one of the wonderful things my mom and dad did, is they let me enjoy my childhood.
So what final word would you have to our Bivo moms and dads in the audience today?
Okay, so I've got, I think, three things. One we kind of talked about already. See where you're called as a blessing. You're not like another minister, and you're not supposed to be, but that's a good thing. Mm. And again, remember that even people that are on the other side of the fence, they're feeling some of the same stuff.
Comparison is a thief of joy, right?
Oh, yeah, that is such a great statement. And I know even I didn't struggle with this early on, but as I'm becoming an old, bitter woman in my 40s, I have discovered, all joking aside, I have discovered that there are times and certain things in ministry that once didn't bother me and bother me now. And I've had to add it to my prayer list. I'm like, Lord, I need you to help me love this. I need you to help me love this place or this situation and be thankful for it. And I'll start a list of thankfulness. I'll even polo my friend and be like, this is cool. I get this because God has me here. And so I think just keep that heart of thankfulness. And if it's a struggle, you need to talk with someone about that. You need to put it on your prayer list and really begin looking at thankfulness and kind of get a reality check that this is a good thing where God called me. The second thing is drama. Don't do it. Don't let it in.
Yes.
And we didn't even get to talk about this, but this is one of the best things that I learned from my parents. And this is one of the reasons I think that I looked on ministry with a favorable viewpoint, is my parents didn't allow drama. They didn't allow it, other people's drama to become their drama. And by the way, pastors, pastors' wives, ministry leaders, we're the worst at this. Mm-hmm. Someone else does not want help. They don't want to get right. And they're going to have this drama. And I don't know how to express it except that this is what their fun is. Their hobby is drama. They don't want their marriage to be fixed.
They professionally go from church to church to church, and you're trying to hold on to them. Let them go to the next one.
Or they stay in your church, but they want to constantly tell you all the things in their marriage or whatever.
Let them
and
go.
They don't want to have it fixed. But their fun is having people pity them and telling people the story.
Right.
And that's a struggle for some people. But it doesn't have to become your struggle. You need to recognize drama for what it is and don't bring it in. And definitely don't bring it in the home. And by the way, it goes beyond, I think, just counseling situations or fickle people. I remember seeing my daddy, and this made a huge impact on me. Daddy and I were at the church for something, because you're always at the church for something, right? And I saw a newspaper, a Christian newsletter, stack of them in the trash can. And I was like, hey, Daddy, someone threw these away. Are these supposed to be in here? And he said, well, we're not going to take that anymore. He said, it's become just a gossip column. He said, and he wasn't in there. He was just a small-time pastor. But he noticed that it began to be a thing that all they wanted to do, instead of talking about things of God or church things or whatever, the Bible, they began to just talk about other ministers.
Yeah.
And my
dad.
That
was a widely circulated newspaper back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And he just decided, no more.
Yeah.
No more.
He didn't leave it on the table. He said, we're not going to do that. And I remember my father always, it's one of the things I learned from my father, is he always said, don't speak ill of the man of God. And it wasn't ignoring truth. It wasn't covering sin.
Yeah.
But he would not abide gossip. And I think it was a humble spirit. There's a lot of wisdom in that. They recognize that. And so I've always tried to be very cautious of that and appreciate that. And I think that's one of the things, again, that helps me. If my dad was constantly berating other pastors and ministry leaders, I think that would have made it harder for me to step into the call that God had me.
That's a really good point.
As a ministry, as someone called a ministry, or even as a Christian going into church. Why would I want to go in church? Because I know all the stuff that, you know, all the people. No, don't abide the drama. Other people, let them have it. But that's not meant for happy homes.
That's a really good point that you were raised with and we were raised with. There was a general consensus that most Christians wanted to follow Jesus and most pastors want to serve Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so there was a general, there are the exceptions, but we don't dwell upon those. We focus on
the good,
not the
bad. And they're all imperfect people, so we're not going to belittle them.
Really
you
good.
Know? And, you know, it's weird. It's like it's in the Bible somewhere that we should think on right things and good things of good report. Wow. Holy and just, acceptable.
You know, if
that
you
almost
quote
seems biblical.
Odd to bring it up on a show like this, right?
Kind of weird.
If you quote any more scripture, you might be preaching, and then some of our audience will have to turn it off. So be careful.
Oh, dear. And then the last thing was just, I think their walk with God was real. And no matter who you are, whether you're in full-time ministry, bivocational ministry, or you're just serving in your local church, it's easy to let your ministry become your walk. And that's not healthy.
So how did that show up as a kid for you?
Okay, this is where my mom would really come in.
Okay.
Because I would really not, and my dad definitely had this walk, but mom was my main discipler. And she's the one that we would spend so much time together. Now, I had rides. My school, because I lived in the country, was like 30, 45 minute drive. So it was daddy's work. So I had drives to and from school and work every day, which, by the way, daddy wouldn't let me have drama in high school either. He was very sensitive to my feelings, but I can't tell you how many times Melvin Coors would look at me after listening to me, talking through the options, advising me, well, you should have this conversation with your coach or friend or whatever. And at some point when I would start crying more, he'd say, well, girl, if that's the worst of your problems, you're going to be all right. And I think that all the time it rings in my head. I'm like, yep. But so I had time with my dad, but I definitely had more time with mom. A lot of pickup days from school with her and a lot of events with her. We'd go to sometimes a ladies event with her. And I would see her up close a bit more as a mother-daughter relationship. And I saw her love for God and her walk with God. And that made me want to have that same thing. And of course, as a kid, I didn't connect that her joy in serving, that my dad's willingness to be kind when others weren't kind or to have a positive spirit was because of their walk with God. I didn't realize that was connected. Now I do. I think the reason my parents, they couldn't fake it that much. It was because they truly walked with God and made that. They were Christians before they were anything else. They were disciples. And being at the feet of the Father is what gave them the perspective and the power and the endurance to do what they did, not only as ministers, but as parents, to still have time for me and to make hard lines and say, no, that's not an emergency. And this is when we're going to spend time with our daughter. Heather's got a ball game or whatever. And so, yeah, so I remember that. And now as an adult, I can see that connection.
One of the things that was most beneficial to us growing up as pastors' kids as a whole was getting to know other pastors' kids and other preachers within their context. And that's one of the reasons why we loved going to the pastors' meetings that we did get to go to. But in reality, a lot of the pastors' meetings we went to were extremely boring because they didn't really have anything planned for the kids. That's why we decided to this year create the Idea Summit in Dallas, where it's a summit, a conference for the whole ministry family. We're paralleled right alongside the preaching conference and the pastor's idea days, ministry leaders of all kind learning. There is a full teen conference for teenagers, especially designed for ministry children. All PKs welcome all those who have ministry kids being part of that. And not only a teen conference, but a kids conference all for all ages. And we want you to be able to bring your family, bivocational or not, to the Idea Summit in Dallas coming up this January at the end of the month. And we're going to have a great time together. You're going to have a great time. Your spouse is going to have a great time. And all of your children will walk away saying, when is the next time we get to go back to Dallas? When is the next time we get to go back to the Idea Summit?
Thanks for joining us today. I know you imparted a lot of wisdom to our listeners. So
good. Well, it was fun. Thanks for letting me share a little bit about my childhood and my parents.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you would like to reach out to us, drop us an email at joshtice@ideanetwork.church. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.